It's Friday, 22nd of March, and this is your Capital Economics Weekly Briefing. I'm Neil Shearing, Group Chief Economist, and this week I'm joined by special guest Andrew Kellingham, who's our Chief Europe Economist. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Neil. Lovely to be here.
Well, David's out this week, so I thought we would talk about the German economy. It's your speciality, but it's in troubled waters. It's doing dramatically bad. Those are just two of the descriptions given recently by its economy minister, Robert Habeck. But I thought today we'd get into just how troubled and just how bad the outlook really is. You've just finished a major report looking at both the near-term outlook but also the longer-term outlook for Germany. There's a lot to process, from worsening demographics to Chinese export competition to how Germany will fare in the AI revolution. But I thought we'd start to unpack some of that in this podcast. Clearly, Germany's the preeminent manufacturer within Europe, and manufacturing has been through a particularly difficult time over the last 12 months or so. We've had these unusually disjointed cycles between services and manufacturing. But how much of the weakness in Germany that we've seen over the past 12 months, and frankly continuing into the start of this year, is about the particular weakness of manufacturing globally and how that's affecting Germany? How much of it is that cyclical element, and how much of it is structural, do you think?
Well, I think there's no doubt that there are some very significant cyclical or at least temporary problems. I would draw that distinction because this is anything but a normal cycle. But I think Germany's been hit harder than most European and most other economies by four main headwinds or four main forces. First, the increase in interest rates and inflation has had a bigger impact in Germany than elsewhere, perhaps partly because it's so capital intensive. The energy shock, as I think is well known, has hit Germany very hard. The weakness in global demand has a bigger effect in Germany because it's much more export oriented than most economies. And on top of that, there's a fiscal tightening going on in Germany, which again is greater than what we're seeing elsewhere. So there are these major cyclical problems, and that's why the economy has not grown at all, and in fact contracted a little bit at the end of last year. However, one of the points I'm making in my report is that the weakness goes back further than that. And actually, if you look back to 2017, that's when growth really more or less came to a halt. Germany's economy's grown by 1% since then. Other European economies like France and Italy by more than 4%. And Spain even by nearly 8%. So something has gone wrong with the German model even prior to the pandemic and prior to the energy price shock.
Yes, and we should get into what's gone wrong with that model. When you've been outgrown by Italy over the course of the past several years, then something clearly has gone wrong. But if the economy's only grown by 1% since 2017, yeah, that's more than halfway through a decade of lost growth, I guess. Coming into this year, there had been some hope that this would be the year where growth starts to pick up and growth returned. We were always a bit skeptical of that idea, and indeed the business surveys since the start of this year have continued to be weak. What do you think the outlook for this year looks like? I mean, on the one hand, as you say, fiscal policy is tightening. I think it's the second largest fiscal tightening over the next couple of years in the G7, according to the IMF. You have these structural problems that you mentioned too in key parts of industry. But on the other hand, real incomes growth should start to turn positive, given that inflation has come down so far. So do you think it's possible that we start to see a return to growth this year?
Well, we've penciled in a return to very low levels of growth in the second half of this year. So yes, you're right that real incomes should increase. But on the other hand, we are seeing the labour market softening, and we think unemployment might actually rise a little bit towards the second half of the year. And meanwhile, some of these cyclical problems are likely to drag on for a bit. Interest rates are still very high. We think they'll only begin to come down in the second half of this year. The fiscal headwind is still going to continue right into next year, in fact. And export prospects are not great either. So we're basically saying it's going to flatline throughout most of this year. Zero growth is most likely. And then a bit of a recovery in 2025. But then the really big question, I think, is what's the trend growth rate going to be once the dust has settled and we come out of this period and these cyclical problems have faded? And that's where I think the bigger issue is, because Germany was used to growing at roughly 1.5% per year during the first two decades of this century. It now looks like it'll be little more than 0.5% over the medium term. And that's a really big adjustment, both for Germany and for the whole of Europe.
Indeed, although if we stretch our minds back even further, I remember starting at the Treasury in the early 2000s, and back then Germany was considered to be the sick man of Europe. We had a conversation earlier, didn't we, about how we used to talk about sclerotic growth in Europe, and really Germany was the symbol of that. Since then, it's clearly transformed its prospects through the 2000s and 2010s. But to what extent do you think that it was really kind of the case of the right place at the right time? If we think about what underpinned that period of growth in Germany, it had secured a supply of cheap energy from Russia. It was one of the few major advanced economies that I think we could say benefited in a substantial way from China's development, insofar as it managed to benefit from China sucking in large amounts of capital goods, and it's a given China's investment-intensive nature of growth. And of course, it really benefited from the establishment of the euro, insofar as it was able to benefit from a relatively cheap currency, lock in low real effective exchange rates, and really for the first part of this century, really saw very little increase in its unit labor costs as a result, so it was able to remain extremely competitive. So to what extent do you think actually it's been ever thus for Germany's economy? It's had a low rates of a trend growth, but really the anomaly was the first 10, 15 years of this century where a number of factors just kind of came together and contributed to this period of faster growth that's now in the past.
Yeah, I mean, you can look back even further if you want. You know, clearly Germany had the economic miracle in the 50s and 60s. That was a period of exceptionally strong growth, partly, you know, catch up after the devastation of the war. It then, since the 80s, its growth rate sort of settled down to a much more sort of normal level for an advanced economy, if you like. But yes, I think there were a few factors that helped out in the early 21st century, including the ones that you listed, which meant that its trend growth rate was a bit higher for a bit longer. But, you know, those things now have come to an end, and we could talk through each of them if we've got time. But, you know, without the same reliable supply of energy, not so much cheap as reliable, I think, without China importing increasing amounts of machinery and equipment, and then there's the car industry, which, you know, made a lot of money from selling cars from Germany to China, but also producing in China. That is clearly very much threatened now by the EV revolution. And then we've also got the transition to sort of more digital and AI type technologies, in which Germany doesn't seem to have any particular strengths. So it seems likely that productivity growth is going to be weaker in future than it has been in the past. There's another factor which I think is quite interesting, with the demographics. It's often pointed out that Germany's population of working age is going to contract in the coming years. But in fact, it has been falling for much of the last 20 years as well. It's just that the economy was able to make up for that by bringing in a lot of people who were unemployed at the beginning of the century, and by increasing the participation rate. Now, neither of those look so hopeful to us looking forward. So I think the underlying demographic problem is going to be a more serious issue for Germany. So that's, again, something they're going to have to look at in terms of policy. There are some discussions about improving the environment for immigration of skilled workers, but I think that's something which is likely to take quite a lot of time.
Yes, I was going to mention immigration. Of course, there's been a large influx of immigration, but that, of course, has political ramifications too. So we should touch on the political consequences of this period of weak growth that we envisage in Germany. But I wanted to come back to one of the points you touched upon earlier, which is to say what's happening in the car industry. In some ways, Germany's car industry, auto industry, has become the poster child for its industrial and manufacturing troubles. Just how important is the car industry, the auto industry, to Germany's economy? And related, how much of this period of weaker growth that we're anticipating is due specifically to structural problems facing Germany's vehicle sector?
So, I mean, it's a very important sector, is a short answer. It's 4.5% of value added in the economy comes directly from vehicles and other transport equipment. That might not sound huge, but when you think about which parts of the economy are actually dynamic and are driving growth, you're really looking at the private sector, and manufacturing in particular is important. So it's a very big part of that, and it has a lot of other industries that feed into it. So if we see growth in the vehicle sector decline, then that will certainly knock a bit off the trend overall aggregate growth rate. I would say, you know, it's difficult to put a number on it, but you're talking about 0.1 or 0.2% off the growth rate directly from the auto sector, potentially. I should say that it's really difficult to forecast what will happen to German vehicle production and indeed more generally to the production of vehicles around the world. The issue they face is that China in particular and then Tesla are currently clearly much more competitive in producing EVs. So there's an existential threat to the German industry that is out there. But how that will play out will depend a lot on how German car manufacturers respond, and they are investing heavily in EVs, but what the policy environment is, how much protection is put in place for European producers. There's an anti-dumping duty investigation currently underway by the European Commission, and what happens elsewhere, including US protectionism. So I don't expect the German car industry to sort of shrink dramatically. It's far too important politically and economically for politicians to allow that to happen. But I don't think it will be the same source of growth that it has been over the past decade or two.
Okay, so if we put all of this together, what are the types of growth rates that we should expect to see from Germany's economy over the kind of coming years? So if you think about the kind of productivity growth, then we think about the growth of the labour force. What's the kind of new normal, do you think, for Germany's economy?
Yeah, so tricky to put a precise number on it, but we think it will be nearer to 0.5% per year in the late 2020s than the sort of 1.5%, which was more typical pre-pandemic. That constitutes a small annual contraction in employment, maybe 0.2% or so, and then productivity growth of around 0.7%. Clearly, there'll be variations around that, and it could well be a little bit higher or it could be a bit lower. But either way, that's, you know, much, much reduced from the kinds of levels that Germany's been used to.
So we're thinking about a third of the rate of growth that we saw before the pandemic. Where does that mean Germany sits alongside other European economies?
So it would still mean Germany would be outperforming Italy. So that's one reason why I would not characterize Germany as the sick man of Europe. It may be, you know, there's a general malaise, but we think it will be probably slightly weaker growth than in France, and in our forecast, a bit weaker than the UK as well.
And what do you think all of this means from a political perspective, both insofar as it relates to Germany, and there's elections, of course, next year, likely to have a new government in place. How's the economy likely to factor into those elections and political developments in Germany? We've already seen the rise of the far right, for example. Is it likely to exacerbate that trend? But also within Europe more generally, you mentioned earlier a malaise. We've talked in the past about how Europe's been forged in times of crisis, or progress has been forged in times of crisis. This isn't really a crisis as such, so much as a stagnation. Does it mean that kind of progress towards greater integration across Europe is going to stall? And then, of course, there's geopolitical angles to all of this as well, in particular relations with China and the US and fracturing and how Europe fits in. So let's just spend some time unpacking the politics of this. How do you think it relates to politics in Germany to start off with? Is the economy going to affect things there?
So, yeah, I mean, in Germany, we've seen pretty big falls in support for the three ruling parties, so this traffic light coalition, as they call it, the SDP, the Greens and the FDP. Support for all of those parties has declined. And the CDU, the sort of centre-right party, which was Angela Merkel's party, has been rising in the polls. So come the elections late next year, it does look as if we will probably see a change in government. The AfD, which is the extreme-right anti-immigration party, has also been gaining support, although a recent scandal has sort of knocked them back a little bit. But I think that will make it more difficult to form a stable coalition towards the end of next year. But I think, you know, the other point to make is that German politicians are struggling to come up with a clear and coherent response to the new challenges that they face. Now, ideally, they would be coming up with plans for very substantial investment in new sectors and to sort of reorient the economy towards the more future-facing sectors. But I don't think there's any sign at this point that's happening.
Yes, and of course, they're in a fiscal straitjacket, really, aren't they? We discussed earlier how Germany's facing the second largest fiscal contraction in the G7 over the next couple of years. And that obviously limits the amount of resource the government has to throw at problems in the economy. What about how Germany fits within the broader European context? And in particular, one question we often get asked by clients is how we are envisaging progress towards greater integration in Europe and the European project evolving. Are Germany's economic troubles likely to affect progress in that regard?
Well, yes, as you said, I mean, it's often remarked that Europe is forged through crises. I think that's a quote from Jean Monnet back in the 1950s, which has been incredibly prescient. So it goes through periods of sort of stagnation in terms of policy, and then they make a big lurch towards integration when there's a crisis that needs a response. That's been true of the pandemic. It was true of the GFC, the Eurozone crisis. It was true way back when we had the ERM crisis. So that's probably what's needed to pull Europe further together towards, say, a fiscal union, or at least to a slightly closer fiscal union. With a Germany that's struggling economically and with politicians who've got one eye over their shoulders at the far right, which is rising in support, it's more difficult for them to agree to policies that push Europe closer together. So that's potentially another problem. Nothing that I think is going to come up in the near term, but it makes the ground more difficult, if you like.
And what about the geopolitical question in all of this? We've written extensively, haven't we, about US-China fracturing, and Germany occupies a slightly awkward place in that fracturing. Clearly, it's very closely aligned to the US politically and economically, but of all the major Western economies, it perhaps has the strongest economic ties, at least, to China. How do you think Germany's economic travails fits into the US-China fracturing story?
Well, Germany is understandably trying to hedge its bets a bit, because when the chips are down, it's the US which is the more important partner for Germany, without question. And of course, there's military strategic issues are the most important ones. But as you said, Germany has very big economic ties to China. And although it's tried to de-risk to some extent, and they've made a number of small policy moves to discourage further integration with China, there are also plenty of examples of German firms doubling down on their investments in China. So they're in an awkward position. They could be collateral damage, essentially, from the conflict, the economic conflict between the US and China. And a future US president, if we have a Trump 2 situation, could even tighten up protection directly against Europe, as happened to some extent with the Inflation Reduction Act already. So, yeah, it definitely doesn't help. But there was a much more comfortable situation for Germany when globalization was in full swing.
Indeed, a fundamentally more challenging outlook for Germany altogether. Thanks, Andrew. I'll post your report on the podcast page, along with reports we've written on the fiscal outlook and fiscal challenges in Europe, as well as AI and US-China fracturing, which we talked about in the course of this podcast. Don't forget to check out CE Advance, our premium platform that contains all of our insights and analysis across the global economy and markets, as well as much more. We'll be back next week with much more on inflation, central banks, and other developments in global macro and markets. But until then, goodbye.
Whilst this podcast is provided with all reasonable skill and care, it comprises the subjective views of our economists. Furthermore, these views are not opinions, nor do they constitute investment or financial advice, or are they guarantees or reassurances to the expected results of any investment products or outcome. You should seek your own specific advice in relation to questions you may have. We will have no liability to you in relation to this podcast whatsoever.